is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Mark Haney today. Kentucky's new governor, Matt Bevin, has been shaking things up since taking office. He's trying to change Medicaid. He's abolished and reorganized the Workers' Compensation Nominating Commission and has overhauled the University of Louisville's Board of Trustees, to name a few. Attorney General Andy Beshear is trying to sue the governor for his actions. We'll talk about the first 7 months Matt Bevin has been Kentucky governor. But first, we're going to talk about service animals. You may know about seeing eye dogs who assist the blind, but animals are being called to help out in many other areas, including working with diabetics and those who suffer from mobility problems and mental illnesses. Joining me to talk about service dogs are Development Director for Four Paws for Ability, Inc., Kelly Cam, parent of a child who uses a Four Paws for Ability service dog, Beverly Walrock, Executive Director for Canine Companions for Independence, Megan Kester, who's joining us on the phone, and father of a child who uses a Canine Companion for Independence service dog, Kurt Feldman. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Marianne.
Certainly glad to have you all here. Megan, thanks for joining us on the phone.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
I would like to start out talking a little bit about what a service dog is. And Kelly, maybe you can just explain that.
Sure. According to the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, a service dog is defined as a dog that has been individually trained to do work or perform tasks for an individual with a disability. And the tasks performed by the dog must be directly related to the person's disability.
So what type of training do they go through?
Well, at Four Paws, our dogs go through 400 to 600 hours worth of training, and that starts as puppies. They're born at Four Paws, and they go through puppy enrichment, basic obedience, crate training, potty training, socialization, and then finally, at about 9 months to a year, advanced training, depending on what that individual's disability is. So they're task trained for that individual.
And talk a little bit, Beverly, about what your connection is.
My connection, I'm a parent of a child with an autism assistance dog. I'm also a volunteer. I help do the puppy raising. And
so how does your child use the dog?
The dog is primarily used for, like, helping him socialize with other people and also helps him with behavior disruption. When he was younger, he used to run off, and it would help. We could use the dog for tracking if we were in a really busy place. We could also tether the dog and keep him from running off.
And tell us how your son uses a dog, Kurt.
Well, my son uses a skilled companion dog for just an elite level of companionship that performs all the tasks that you would expect of a service dog, but it also offers a degree of holistic and fulfilling companionship in all aspects of Conrad's life that basically opens up the world to Conrad.
Now, Megan, you work with the Canine Companions. Tell us what your group does and how that's all set up.
Sure. So we are a national organization, the largest one providing assistance dogs, and we're really working and placing dogs in different ways. So we have skilled companions, as Kurt mentioned, where our dogs are working with children and a parent as the facilitator of the team. We place service dogs where adults and dogs are placed together as a team, again, always providing that assistance and tasks to help with independence. We also place hearing dogs for those who need that assistance, and facility dogs. So we also place dogs with able-bodied individuals who are using the assistance dog and those tasks to help their clients. Think of maybe a therapy setting where it might not be very exciting to do your exercises today, but if part of those exercises means caring for a dog or giving those commands to the dog, that makes it a lot more fun.
Now, are service animals always dogs, or are there other animals as well? Kelly?
They're actually, according to the ADA, the only two approved service animals are dogs and miniature horses. We do not use miniature horses. I don't know if we're ever planning to, but I am under the impression that guide dog agencies are considering miniature dogs, if not already using them, because they do have a longer life. I'm told they can live up into their 30s versus, you know, the dogs that we use, you know, their average lifespan is 10 to 12 years.
Well, we want to talk to someone who actually uses a dog, and joining us on the phone is Canine Companions for Independence graduate Jake Jacobson. Hi, Jake.
Hi, how are you doing? Happy 4th of July.
Well, thanks. 5th of July, too. Huh? Tell us a little bit about your situation and how you use your service dog.
My service dog, I'm a Canine Companions for Independence. I'm teamed with a half Labrador, half Golden Retriever named O'Reilly III. For about a year now, last August, I went to training and was paired with him. O'Reilly, if I back up just a little bit, I'm an L2 paraplegic and wheelchair bound for 34 years now. O'Reilly, primarily, he's with me 24 hours a day, but his primary function, what I use him for, is locomotion. He provides pull power for me anywhere that I go.
So he'll pull you in a wheelchair?
He pulls me in a wheelchair, not unlike a sled dog, kind of like that, but with a lot more control. And but yes, that's what he does for me on a daily basis. Anytime I need power to go from one end of the parking lot to the other, something along those lines, O'Reilly provides that energy for me in terms of pulling. I've had over the years, multiple surgeries on elbows and shoulders and that type of stuff from arthritis, from the action of pushing a wheelchair. And, I'm getting older. I'm in my mid-50s now, and certainly there'll come a point in time where I'll have to move to an electric chair. And I don't want to do that. And right now a viable option is to use O'Reilly the Wonder Dog to get from one place to the next.
Does he also serve as a companion for you as well?
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I heard some of the other guests talking about some of the, other benefits, like to get someone to exercise along the way or something along those lines. And not something that you can write down necessarily, but just by being around the dog all the time, there's some sort of energy that he gives off. And I have stopped taking pain medication for arthritis since for about a year. Since my introduction with the dog.
You've had the dog for about a year then, you said?
Yeah. In August 15th will be 1 year for us being teamed together.
Kurt, maybe you can relate that a little bit with your son. Do you find that his mood has changed or his situation is different because he has the dog around?
Absolutely. Now, I've been involved with this organization, Canine Companions for Independence, for over a decade. And, gosh, I was thinking when I was listening to Captain Jacobs and Jake speaking there, reminds me of the saying, some angels have wings. Well, really, mine have tails. And I think of Conrad's skilled companion dogs as angels. They've not only enhanced his mood, but the mood of others around him, and have simply allowed him to engage in the world around him. Before, Conrad couldn't go to the places in the community or community events. He was more like a pariah. He would be screaming, just kind of, it was awkward. Now he's a fixture, not a pariah at such functions. So,
how does that dog do that?
That's a great question. It's really hard to interact with a spastic quadriplegic boy. Who sometimes it's a little bit scary. You don't know what to say. You don't know what to do. So the natural tendency is to shun them. When they see that yellow and blue leash Velcro to his little hand, and they see that beautiful black Labrador Retriever, or in the case of the successor dog, that beautiful yellow Lab Golden Retriever hybrid, Liza, they instantaneously break down barriers. The dogs almost emote a sense of empathy, and people want to connect with Conrad through the service dog. So the benefits are almost unquantifiable. They're they look subjective, but for a parent who has nothing but despair when they see their child being flummoxed by sociological and physical barriers in society, to all of a sudden see, help coming in a four-legged creature like a skilled companion dog, it just brings hope to the equation. And, you know, that's that impact is something that I can quantify and can testify as I am today.
Jake, do you find that people interact with you more when you have the dog?
I'd just like to echo some of the comments that I just heard. Yeah, there's a lot of people will, you know, they have interest in the dog, and they'll say, you know, it's a beautiful animal. What kind of, you know, where'd you get him? How long have you been paired together and that type of thing? But on the, just in general, when people pass you, you know, in the hallway or across the parking lot or whatever it is, very few people can pass that team and not smile. So there's just, it's not on the same level as engaging, you know, someone who's otherwise not engageable. But the happiness that the dog provides is, it like follows in a wake wherever we go. You can't be around this dog and not be able and not smile. That's the truth.
Now, Kelly, when you're training these dogs, are they they're on duty when they're with their owners, companions? Do you find that train them in a way so they aren't interacting with somebody who wants to come up and pet them? I mean, what should people do? What's the best way to handle that?
Well, when our dogs are actually in training, before they're actually placed with their individual, we actually encourage people to come up and ask, may I pet the dog, and interact, because we want them to get used to all different types of people and situations. But once they're placed, they're actually, you know, we let it up to the families. If they want to put a please ask to pet patch on the vest, because it just depends on what that dog is being trained to do. So if it's seizure alert or diabetic alert or hearing ear, a lot of times the parents do want that dog to be completely 100% focused on the child at all times. But in the case of maybe autism, some of our parents do like people to come up and interact and ask the child, tell me about your dog. Can I pet your dog? And really gets them out of their themselves. And Bev mm-hmm. can attest to that.
Tell us, Bev.
Exactly. It's interesting that having that dog there just seems to bring, it just brings the comfort level of the child, but also kind of forces that interaction a little bit. And we saw that for the first time. I was taking my son to the eye doctor, and I had went up to pay the bill. And my son's usually very quiet and very just wanting to get out of a waiting room. And I let, you know, nobody else but another family was in the waiting room, so I let my son just sit in one of the seats with his dog, and she was doing the lap, which she would lay over him and calm him down. And I looked back after I paid the bill, and he was there talking with another person. She was asking about his dog. And it's the first time I'd ever seen him that comfortable just talking with somebody. And we encounter that a lot. Now, there are times when we don't want that interaction because he may not be ready for it, but usually we encourage it.
Jake, I want to thank you for joining us. We're going to take a short break here, but it's great that you were able to talk with us. We appreciate it. Jake is a Canine Companions for Independence graduate. We're talking about service animals today on Cincinnati Edition. We'll continue our discussion with the rest of our guests in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We continue our discussion about service animals. Joining me are Development Director for Four Paws for Ability, Inc., Kelly Cam, parent of a child who uses a Four Paws for Ability service dog, Beverly Walrock, Executive Director for Canine Companions for Independence, Megan Kester, and father of a child who uses a Canine Companion for Independence service dog, Kurt Feldman. You can call us at 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Megan, we haven't had a chance to hear from you much. Do you agree that the dogs can do more than just help the person who has the dog with their needs or mobility, but with other things as well?
Absolutely. So besides the safety and independence that they get from the dogs, you know, in looking at surveys from our graduates, we hear a lot that they are finally more comfortable in opening up, whether it is interacting or just even going to a social place. A lot of times in their training, we're even touching on that, you know, what it's like to go to the grocery store now versus what it's like to go to the grocery store with a canine companion by your side. That trip's going to take a few extra minutes because people are likely going to stop and want to chat with you. And so I think it's been a door opener in so many ways, whether it's to a child or a veteran or an adult. We really see that benefit as just something else that they can really report that changes their lives.
We're going to go now to Regina in Brown County. Hi, Regina. What's your question? Regina? Regina, are you there?
Yeah. Yes, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead. What's your question, please?
I know that dogs can be trained to sense allergies, allergy reactions, and seizures. My question is regarding uncontrolled or difficult controlled high blood pressure where it goes to dangerous levels. And if you're out and about, you don't necessarily have a blood pressure cuff to check it. Are dogs able to be trained to sense that?
Do any of you know Megan?
Kurt? Canine Companions does not train our dogs for seizure sensitivities or blood pressure. A lot of times dogs are in tune to their graduate and may sense some things, but we don't certify that our dogs are able to do that.
And high blood pressure itself doesn't really cause, like, I believe, like a chemical secretion that the dogs might, you know, catch a sense of. Now, if they were maybe at the point of a stroke, but anything else is just conjecture.
Yeah, usually it's more of a physical sense that something is wrong, you know, flushing and headache. So that makes sense. But I thought it was worth checking.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling. We appreciate it. We're going
right,
now
bye-bye.
To Sue from Beavis. Hi, Sue. What's your question?
Well, I have a concern that people, I've seen a few people abusing the service dog label. I was at the boathouse and a couple brought their small dog in and it jumped on the table. A fella brought his medium-sized dog to Montgomery Inn.
And you,
in Montgomery, and
you're
the dog
saying
was
that,
jumping on people.
You're saying that
and
these...
that's my concern, that the doctors are giving people a thing that says it's a service dog and the dog has never been trained to behave.
Kurt?
Well, I'd like to thank the caller for bringing up this very, very important issue. As a parent with a child with a disability, this is my number one, and a service dog advocate, this is my number one concern. It's not physicians. There are an alarming number of internet companies and even some organized crime syndicates that sell assistance dog vests and identification to anyone who wants to purchase them. This fake certification allows people to do exactly what you're saying they're doing, untrained pets in public places. As a result of this fraud, people with disabilities who have a legitimate need for an assistance dog face added discrimination and are being denied access to public places, which is in violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act. So I would love for you and anybody else who is listening to take one small step to help prevent this. Visit www.cci.org. Once again, that's www.cci.org/stop fraud. And there's going to be a letter, a template that you can sign or personalize, and it will be delivered to the Department of Justice in accordance with International Assistance Dog Week.
Now, tell us, Kelly and Megan, maybe you can fill in. Do you find this is a problem?
Yes, absolutely. The state of Florida actually just enacted a law that it is illegal and they will prosecute people that are trying to pass off their pets as service dogs. It absolutely affects, like Kurt said, you know, our children and our veterans with disabilities, just makes it much harder for them, and it definitely has to be stopped.
Megan?
People, you know, think that it would be great to take their pet dog places, but what they're realizing is without that training and without that certification, they are really causing a real detour for those that really need dogs with them to do simple everyday tasks. And so in that thought of, oh, I want my dog there, they have really stepped in boundaries and created a lot of obstacles for those that need their dogs with them. And so now retail owners or other places are saying, oh, we're not sure if we want dogs around because they haven't had true assistance dogs there that are certified to be out in public. There's a reason that these individuals and animals go through that training, is so that they can be out and not be disruptive. They are there to help individuals. They're not there to disrupt the public or the individuals. And so it causes a lot of obstacles for our graduates.
Now let's talk, if we can, about the cost of all of this. If people want or need a service dog, how expensive is it?
It's very expensive. Mm-hmm. People are really surprised when we tell them, you know, how much it costs to train and place a service dog. For Four Paws, it's anywhere between $22,000 and $46,000. And the big discrepancy there is it's based on what tasks the dog is trained to do and then how old the dog is. So every day that we have the dog in our possession and are training the dog, that little meter goes up on how much the dog costs, you know, because the dog gets fed. We have staff 24/7, 365 days a year. So obviously that's a big part of it. Absolutely, people are surprised, but it definitely is, it's worth it because of what, you know, kind of miracles they've been able to help people with disabilities.
And I will say that Canine Companions, I never paid 1 cent for the dog, either dog. They were free.
And how does that work?
At Four Paws, we have a fee-for-service for our children, and they pay a percentage of the cost of the dog. For our veterans, it is a free program. We have private funding that we've gotten for our veterans. Unfortunately, we have so much demand for our children that we're placing 116 dogs this year with kids and 5 veterans. So for us to be able to try to help all 116 kids with that, to cover that fee, it would take a staff of me plus about 10 other people probably to be able to pull that off. So our families do participate in our mission, and they do that fee for service. And we've placed over 1,000 dogs doing it that way, so it does seem to work well for us.
Does insurance cover any of that?
Unfortunately, it does not. Even though a service dog is a durable medical good, my assumption is that the insurance companies are uncomfortable because it is a living thing versus just a wheelchair, which is also a durable medical good. You know, you can fix a wheelchair if it breaks down. You can't necessarily fix a dog if it were to become sick.
Megan, what about your service?
So Canine Companions for Independence, for a team in its full placement, from the breeding of the dogs through all of the puppy raising advanced trainings. And once the dog is paired, we also follow that graduate and dog throughout the lifespan of the team. So we're seeing them eye to eye every year or 2 years to make sure they're still working together. So for the lifespan of a team, we're really looking at $50,000 per placement. A little different from Kelly, all of our dogs have all of the skills and then are able to pair best with their recipient based on temperaments and good pairings and lifestyles that will make sense. But it's $50,000 per placement, and we do provide those dogs for free to all of our graduates, and that really requires us to do a lot on the funding side, but that is all private funding that comes in and supports those teams. We placed 309 teams last year across the country and have placed just over 5,000 teams in our 41-year history.
How long have people been using dogs in this manner? Is this decades and decades upon decades? Do you know?
Well, at Canine Companions, they started in about 1975. Obviously, we're familiar with the Mission of the Blind being around for quite some time, but I'm really aware of it in the early 70s. Megan might know a little bit more, Megan or Kelly.
That's right. That's when it started to really put itself on the board and started small placements, but realizing the true benefits of what an assistance dog could do.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for being here today. It's been a pleasure to talk with you, and we have some links on our website as well if you have questions, and we really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I've been talking with Development Director Four Paws for Ability, Inc., Kelly Camp, parent of a child who uses a Four Paws for Ability service dog, Beverly Walbrock, Executive Director for Canine Companions for Independence, Megan Kester, and father of a child who uses a Canine Companion for Independence service dog, Kurt Feldman. In just a moment, we'll talk about Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin's first 7 months in office.